This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Losers, in other words.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Thanks for listening. Welcome back. Mike Shope and the Bulldog here. Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals tonight in Boston. Blues Bruins. On WGR after our show and then Sneaky Joe's shortened nightcap edition. Dan Rosen of NHL.com joins us from Boston. Senior writer for NHL.com on Twitter at DRosenNHL. Hi, Dan. Thanks for your time on this important hockey day.
Yeah, it's a big hockey day. No question about it. No problem, guys. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How many finals, seventh games is this for you, if I may ask?
Stanley Cup Final, Game 7. I did one in 2003, Devils Anaheim. I did the 2011 Boston-Vancouver game, and now this one. I was not at the 2009 game between the Penguins and the Red Wings because I was awaiting the birth of my son.
Oh, that's, you know, not that you need this from us. That's a good reason.
legitimate reason, I think.
Yeah. Well, you're due for a good game then. Those were two of the less exciting. Not that there have been that many in like the last 30 years or so, but those two you were at were not great games.
No, well, I mean, they were both shutouts, actually.
Right.
It was 3-0 Devils and 4-0 Bruins, but it's exciting regardless. I mean, the energy in the building, it's just crazy. It's awesome.
Yeah, this is probably better left unsaid, but I'm just wondering how differently this conversation would be going if one of us had decided to chastise you for skipping a Game 7 for the birth of your son.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, hey, I mean...
You've probably been on those shows.
I will say, I didn't do any of the Stanley Cup Final that year. So it wasn't just the Game 7. I didn't do any of the Cup Final.
Right. That coming from someone who I was having my wedding reception 20 years ago next Wednesday, which is the anniversary of the triple overtime Game 6 Sabres Final against Dallas.
Yeah.
And yes,
well,
I had this job then. So that was a little awkward for me.
Were you at that game, Dan? Were you in Buffalo for that?
I was not. No, I wasn't doing hockey at the time. I was not there yet. Nope.
So how much different? You mentioned the vibe in the building. I've never been to any Game 7 in person to experience it. Here it being the Stanley Cup Final, has it all the more ratcheted up? Is there a detectable difference in the players yesterday at practice or game day skates today? Any access you've had that you sense that the players are feeling it a little bit more than normal?
Not really, to be honest with you. It's more along the lines of just things that they say. They're admitting that they will be nervous before the game. You don't hear that before any other game in the playoffs, certainly not the regular season. The admission of having to calm themselves down, the nerves and the energy and all that, talking about that stuff. Also talking about the dream. Right.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of talk about that. I did a story on it where did you play your Game 7 when you were a kid? You know, Game 7 Stanley Cup Final, where were you? And there's a lot of talk about that, thinking about things like that. Normally, obviously, you wouldn't ever get that. But no, to be honest with you, I haven't gotten a vibe of it being that much different, them treating it differently. I think back 2003, which is the first Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final I covered. And I was brand new on it. I was 25 years old, and I remember being in New Jersey, where I'm from, speaking to John Madden at the time for the Devils, and he had this big scar on his face that was a result of a play during that playoffs, and he looked like he was going to chew through anybody who talked to him. It was like just this steel look of, like, I will eat you alive if you ask me the wrong question, because he was that determined and focused. Players have gotten a little bit more relaxed, I think, and these guys are. But they will be nervous. They will feel the intensity of it.
Yeah.
They will. The building's just going to be great.
Yeah, Madden always seemed like a pretty serious guy on the ice. I'll say that. Like he had a look than maybe not lots of guys have. He looked pretty serious.
Yeah, he did. Yeah,
You know what though, Dan? Like, there's the players, and obviously there would be a lot of anxiety or just energy. The fans too. I mean, St. Louis fans, especially right now. We were just talking and have talked about this throughout. This is the night. You either accomplish, your team either accomplishes the thing that you have waited forever for, that has never happened, that you hardly ever get this close, or you go right back to how you've always been living. You know, like, it's just all right here. And you had that game six that will make it really tough to swallow if they lose.
Yeah, you're 100% right. When you think about it in those terms, it is quite dramatic. I mean, it really is. Like, you've waited 52 years to have this opportunity, and you've had it twice. And if you don't get it done either time, it's 53, and you've got to go right back to square one.
It's like, just 53.
It's just 53. I mean, yeah, they've made it as far as they've ever made it. They'll hang a banner in Enterprise Center regardless, but a Western Conference champions banner is not one that, you know, floats very well when you have the opportunity to win the Stanley Cup. So, yeah, you put it in those terms, it is the all-or-nothing night. Well, it's the all-or-nothing night for everybody in Boston, too, but the Bruins have won it many times before, and the city of Boston has experienced so many championships of late that, it's almost like if the Bruins lose, it's like disappointment, and there's no question about it. But it's not the feeling of everything's crashing down around your sports world. If the Blues lose, it's that feeling of everything. I would imagine it's got to be that feeling of everything crashing around your sports world.
Sure, and I think now, like, this era in the NHL, more than any other, not that the Blues wouldn't be a team that come September, people like yourself wouldn't predict to be in the playoffs, but they're not they don't go right to the top of the heap again for 2020 as like the favorite or anything. They more than any team in recent history are an example of how quickly it can change. I mean, they were in last place in January, and here they are in the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, they were last place on January 3rd, and here they are in the Stanley Cup final, Game 7. They could be the first team in the history of the NHL to be last after playing at least 30 games in the regular season and to go on to win the Stanley Cup. And if they win it, all of the history stories, it all makes, it's all great. If they don't, they got to go through 82-game grind again to get back, just to have a chance to have to win the Stanley Cup. That's where it comes and really hits you. It's like, if you don't get it done, you have to go 82 games just to earn the chance, to have the chance to get it done again.
Dan,
it's crazy.
Dan Rosen from NHL.com is on the Wester Hotline with us. He's in Boston, site of Game 7 tonight between the Blues and the Bruins. How much is maybe the league, the executives within the league, the commissioner on down, and maybe even people who just love the game, rooting for a clean, non-controversial, no official snafu game tonight, because that has really been a thing in the playoffs, and it seemed like it died down a little bit, but then it was right back front and center the last couple of games.
Yep. 100%, and I think they have to be. You don't want any controversy entering a Game 7. Put it this way. You don't want any controversy entering any game, right? But when it's an all-or-nothing game, when there's literally no tomorrow in the 2018-19 NHL season, it's over tonight. It ends at some point, unless it ends after midnight in overtime, whatever it may be, right? But it ends, so you don't want any controversy now. You want a clean game, clean calls, make the right calls. You hope both teams play it clean, physical, hard, good, some old school hockey, and let's award a winner. That's the way it's got to be played tonight. That's the way you want it played tonight.
It's one reason why I like the Blues a little bit as an underdog, because special teams are Boston. That was a story in Game 6. And if officials decide to not be, like, sort of as your instinct to not make that call because it's Game 7 in the finals, then maybe the Blues can get away with a little more. And go ahead, please.
I think they have to keep it 5-on-5. I mean, number one, you're right. I think they got to keep it at even strength because they've been dominated in the special teams game.
And you mentioned overtime. This is something that we've not brought up while we've had you on. But we're talking about earlier, 1954 is the last seventh game of the finals to go to overtime. That's, you know, pretty wild, and it's due to happen. That doesn't mean it will. I like it, Dan, for, you know, we're all middle-aged here, and we've never seen it. Like, how many things are there in hockey or in sports that we've never seen? And so this could be that, and that's the thing I want the most tonight is overtime.
I tell you what, these two – look, I don't know what's going to happen, but these two teams are so even, except in the special teams game in this series. And if it stays mostly a five-on-five game, or the Blues' penalty kill finally comes through and does a job, you know, or just does its job, and we're talking about a game determined at five-on-five, wouldn't shock me at all if it went to overtime. Wouldn't at all, because these teams are this even. We said it going into the series. We said it in the middle of the series, and now we're saying at the end of the series how even these two teams are, because they really are.
It seems like what we have most of the time when you get to this spot, if you do. And so let's just see that one goal for all of it happen for the first time in so long. So, Dan, the Sabres, there's been some news with Ralph Kruger's hiring and then Jeff Skinner signing the other day. What's your overall thought about them going into next year?
I got to see a lot more. I mean, to be honest with you, I'm not infatuated with the Jeff Skinner contract. I understand you have a guy, he scores a lot of goals, you got to pay your guy. I get that argument. It's a lot of money to pay Jeff Skinner. It's a lot of money to pay a guy who's never played in the playoffs. Is that totally his fault? No, of course that's not his fault. So, but he's got to keep doing it, and they've got to now build. I mean, and with Ralph Kruger there, he's a good motivator. He's very good with players. We've seen it at various times. He gets them going and all that, and he's very good at talking to them. Will he be able to be the X's and O's man in the NHL today? Can he devise systems that work in the NHL today? We haven't seen Ralph Kruger in the NHL in the last 5 years. He hasn't been in hockey.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's got to be a room for I need to see it to believe it. That's kind of where I'm at with it.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair, for sure. And there's also, you know, they've got a lot of work to do on the roster. You know, I mean, it can turn quick. We've seen it again and again. Different examples of teams that are at the bottom that are you know 100-point teams a year later. But there's a lot of work to do, and there's still some pretty weighty contracts that you'd probably rather not have holding you back, but you can't really move them.
Yeah, you think about where they are right now. Are they in a better spot today than they were at this time last year? And I don't know that they are, you know. And you're like you said, things can change quickly in the NHL. Look at the Blues, dead last on January 3rd, came back and they're in the Stanley Cup final. But the Blues weren't a bad team on January 3rd. They just weren't winning games,
right?
You know, they were a team built to win this season. It's going to take some more time in Buffalo. They don't have enough right now. They've still got to acquire. They got to get more and more and more. You look at the teams that have played on in the playoffs this year, not just these two, but others that have played on. The Sabres are not close to those teams, at least in my opinion. It doesn't mean they can't catch up quick with the right moves and guys coming along quicker and, you know, a bigger big-time performances from some guys and whatnot. That can happen. We've seen it happen in the NHL. But I look at them right now and I say, I don't know if they're in a better position today than they were on June 12th, 2018.
And that's O'Reilly is on the roster. Skinner is not. Robin Leonard, I suppose, would have been on the roster at that time.
Right.
Dan, I'd like to share with you our Blues story here at the station. I was like sort of the way you're talking, looking at the Blues like, well, the possession numbers are actually really good. So I don't think this is a bad team. And one day, just for something to do, I said to the guys here, let's have a bet. I'll take the over, St. Louis, points at the end of the season. They were last in the league. And we decided on the number for that to be 80. And I remember, like, these guys bet me that the Blues wouldn't get to 80 points. And I remember the next day looking at it, we write these kind of silly bets on a board in here that I'm facing as we talk. And I remember the next day sitting in here going, why did I go that high? I didn't really need to go that high for this. I probably could have got them at 75. And what did they get to? I mean, of course, they're
99.
They're playing the 99?
Yeah, that was that bet was over in March.
They're playing tonight.
it was toast pretty soon. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I won if they're playing the
99.
Night.
99. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they had the most wins in the NHL from January 3rd on. So.
Very good.
Pretty impressive. Yeah.
Hey Dan, thanks a lot. It's been nice talking to you.
All right, you got it, guys. Thanks.
All right, Dan Rosen at NHL.com at DRosenNHL. Really want that overtime. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I am not watching the beginning of this game because it'll be light out and it's beautiful out. I'll either be the plan is either just like looking at the sunset as it starts to take shape, or watching my kids finish up their baseball games or something like this.
Okay, sure.
And then I will be tracking it, of course, be following the game. And if we get to the third period, the sun is set. The baseball is over.
Sure, yeah. It's third period. It's 10 o'clock. Yeah.
The kids are in bed, and the game is not Boston by two or more. I'm turning it on.
Otherwise, you're not even going to bother.
If Boston's up by two goals in the third, like, yeah, I'm not going to bother.
All right.
I don't have any use for it.
I'll tell you what happens.
You will, I assume. Somebody will tell me.
You'll find out without me.
But I'll probably find out.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if it gets closer,
yeah,
then I will, then I'll turn it on then. But as long as Boston's ahead by two or more, you know,
I will
congrats.
Watch every minute of it. I will watch every. I think my watching partner, my oldest son, is going out. He was invited to a friend's house to watch the game, so I think he's going to do that. So I'm certainly not going to be selfish and say, "No, come on, I want you to stay home." Yeah, but I will be saddled up and watching.
Is it bad that I don't want to watch if Boston?
Be alone.
Like, is it bad?
I don't know. I mean, you don't.
You're coming from a place like it's game seven of the finals.
Yeah, I mean,
so
yeah,
everything else comes after that.
Yeah,
this is what takes precedence. But I don't know. I don't.
And it's not. I don't expect. I mean, the series has not been. You know, we talked about Anaheim and New Jersey in 2003, and just how horrific that was to watch. It just was not fun sports, really, unless you really had a stake in the winner. And even then, I think it would have been tough. This is not that been that. I mean, I don't have a real stake here, but the hockey's been great.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a lot, you know, it's been really good. So I don't want to miss a second of it. And I'm a little bit like Paul gets when this time of the year comes around, like I'll miss it when it goes. I mean, I've been going home. I mean, the playoffs, it stretches out here. So it's not been every day for a while now. But between October and, say, the conference finals beginning, I go home and turn a hockey game on every day.
And I never do.
For months on end. I mean, I just do it. So, this is not out of duty or anything, but for me to sacrifice, unless there's some, if there were some, luckily Leo has a big like season-ending concert at his high school on Thursday. If that were tonight, I would be at that, and I'd be missing the part, you know, the front half of this game, and I would do that because that takes precedence. But if I got nothing like that in the way, my kids' baseball would also get in the way. Like, if I were you, I would be out watching them play, and then when it's over, I'd get home and turn it on as soon as I can. I don't want to miss a minute of it, and I don't have anything conflicting, so I will be ready to go. I'm not saying I'm watching pregame coverage.
I'm happy to hear like judgment or reaction to this, like, because I'm not saying it with any pride or anything. I'm also not embarrassed to tell you. It's just there are very few nights. My kids are 9 and 7. I'm 47. Sports has been a huge part of my life. There are very, very few nights in the course of a year when I get home and turn a game on any sport. When do I do it? NFL Sunday nights. I never miss the Sunday night game. Like, I'm always watching football from the minute I get home on Sunday after Bills to the end of the night, right to the end of the night. I'm watching the NBA Finals, the occasional baseball game, morning soccer, Saturday morning soccer, like,
Sunday,
you know,
sure.
When that's going.
Yep.
I'll usually be the first one up maybe on a Saturday and turn on Premier League. But even baseball, like, it's not a hockey thing only. Baseball is my favorite, but I'm watching my phone at night to see what's happening in baseball. Mm-hmm. And I have all the games.
Yeah.
But I'm not very often anyway. I watched Chris Paddock last night, but that was after the kids were in bed. for San Diego. So it's kind of like only those things.
I'm having a harder and harder time than ever with baseball, and I don't think it's just like that I've changed or that my attention is harder to hold because of whatever, the iPad or the just whatever. The last few times I've turned a game on and had it on, I'll be sitting there and I just think,
no interest.
This is nothing that, you know, this can be the Red Sox or not. It's been them a couple times. Mostly I just sit there and I think, like, I don't know, Family Guy rerun, whatever. Just get me right out of here. I'm out. I don't know. It's not
Top Chef for me over the sports.
It's not really working for me. I don't know, but
same thing.
That's just, you know, baseball is a lot of strikeouts and there's not a lot of action in the game anymore, it seems to me. And I think a lot of people are saying that, and I think it's having an effect on my watching habits, I'm pretty sure.
Action, and I think what goes hand in hand is strategy, and if you like it for that, like I always like baseball for that, but that's kind of missing too, relatively. Sal Capaccio coming up next. We'll switch to the Bills. There was a moment in this Women's World Cup soccer game that happened while we were talking to Dan Rosen that was unbelievable. We'll tell you about that as we continue here. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog next with Sal Capaccio. This is WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Bulls are in the middle of minicamp. We'll talk to Sal Capaccio about today's events in a moment. And I really don't know what to ask Sal about anything that's happened, because the only thing I saw Sal mention on Twitter was that it was nice out over there. I missed everything else he might have said about practice today.
Missed the picture he posted of himself and the Bills offensive line coach because people say they look alike. You missed that?
I missed that.
Okay.
But that would also be like, I still don't know what happened in practice.
Yeah.
Even seen that.
Yeah.
Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals is tonight. The Bruins hosting the Blues. Coverage on WGR begins at 7:45. No seventh game of the finals has gone to overtime since 1954. Why shouldn't this one? I guess, like we just talked about, you get to the seventh game of the finals, everybody would always think these teams are pretty even. And that would be the case here. Let's see overtime. It hasn't happened in 65 years. Kevin Durant posted on Instagram that he had successful surgery on a ruptured Achilles tendon. This is how it became officially known, that was the injury Durant suffered on Monday night in Toronto. Game 6 of the NBA Finals is tomorrow night.
Other NBA news, Kyrie Irving has declined his one-year player option with the Boston Celtics, which would have been worth $21.3 million, and he's reportedly told the Nets he is serious about signing in Brooklyn. And Adrian Wojnarowski reports that the Celtics and Lakers are engaged in trade talks for Anthony Davis. The Lakers' fourth overall pick could be used to get a star player for the Pelicans. Meanwhile, Davis's agent tells SI that Davis will not sign an extension in Boston. So stay tuned. Always a lot of drama and upheaval in the NBA offseason. Of course, Durant's injury adds a new layer to that, too. The Bisons, by the way, are in action this afternoon. They currently lead Indianapolis 9-6. That game is in the bottom of the eighth and is currently airing on ESPN 1520. Next update in about half an hour.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio, Sal Capaccio
on WGR.
While I don't know anything about what might have happened with the Bills today, I do remember that yesterday there was one area that I wanted to get to that we did not get to. So we will at least have that today. Maybe Sal has a lot for us on day two of Bills minicamp, day two of three. But I don't know. Sal Capaccio now on the Western Hotline. Hello, Sal.
What's up, Mike? How are you? Hey, Chris.
Hi.
What's the news today?
I don't freaking know. I just enjoyed the sunshine today. I just went out there and kind of bathed.
All right.
Nice.
Enjoyed it. Walked around. Chatted with people.
Then I did get the full story.
You got the full story. I would say the news is really that nothing has moved on any of the injuries. I don't expect anything to change tomorrow either. It looks like you know, everybody who is out right now or limited is going to remain that way through the remainder of minicamp. Something I just wrote about, I just posted just before I went on with you guys. You know, it is interesting. I stood there and I looked today at the injured or limited players, and you know, they're all offense. That's what they are. And it's amazing to me that this defense has had such continuity since day one. We've talked a lot about the offense for good reason, Josh Allen, all that kind of stuff, the injuries they've had. But the defense has really just been the same 11 players every single day, really going back to phase one of the start of this thing. So I talked to Micah Hyde after practice about it with some other reporters and asked him, you know, about that. And he gave some good quotes about, you know, why that matters, obviously, and you would think it would. But I do think it's interesting that all of these injuries are on offense, and on the defense, they've just been out there, and they've been the same guys pretty much all offseason.
Well, that's good. I mean, they're going to need to count. Of course they are, and it's almost nothing to say it, to count on that defense. But right, they have most or all, Sal, of what I imagine they want in building that, right? I know Sean
right.
McDermott got a question yesterday about this year's defense versus last year. He's like, it's new. We want to be the one thing he did say was, again, this is like what you might write down predicting his answer, is more physical. But for personnel, how close are they to peak?
It's really good, Mike. I like their defense from top to bottom. It's solid. You're right. I don't know if you can get, you know, you look around the NFL and sure, you're going to get some, are you going to compare them to the, you know, early 2000 Ravens? I mean, you know, that's teams that really just built these incredible defense with Hall of Famers. But when you just talk about solid players all around the ball, all 11 guys, and then on top of that, you throw in pretty much the same system for most of them, if not for 2 years, for 3 years. A lot of guys, 2 years, like Matt Milano or Tremaine Edmonds and, mm-hmm. and guys like that. You know, you talk about that, and then you talk about the continuity of what I just said, the 11 guys all together. It really matters. And if I had to pick one, like, spot, and I'm not talking about what could they use better. They have to be better getting to the passer. I think that's a thing they need to be better at. But if I had to take one position and I say, like, where's the weak spot on defense? I don't know what I would say. You would probably go right to opposite corner of Tre'Davious White, but Levi Wallace had a good year last year, and Kevin Johnson looks good, and I think they're really pretty solid at every spot, to be
yeah.
honest with you.
I mean, they're deep there.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have a stud, but, you know, you've got a stud on the one side, and I think there's enough competition there that I feel like I'm going to get a pretty good player, or at least a competent player, starting over on that side. I wonder what their preference might be, you know, considering what they want for the slot, and then just considering, you know, injuries. Taron Johnson played through some stuff last year. EJ Gaines is back, and he had health problems when he was last here. Probably, I think, also had injuries in Cleveland last year while he was there. But I feel like they've got some nice possibilities opposite Tre'Davious White.
Yep, that's right. And Levi Wallace right now is holding it down. I mean, that's his job right now. But I keep cautioning that when the pads go on, I want to see what happens. He was a guy that had to be stronger than he was last year. He had to be a little more physical. He wasn't that great in run support from, you know, my evaluation of him. And I think he's got to be better. Well, he's got to show that at training camp if he want to keep that spot. Because I will tell you that Kevin Johnson is right on his heels. And Kevin Johnson wants to be physical. That is the type of game he plays, which is why he's actually had some of his injuries, because he plays a lot like Taron Johnson, but he's bigger and longer than Johnson. He's an outside guy. But Kevin Johnson is right on Levi Wallace's heels, and if Levi Wallace can show that he's ready to step up and do that, he's going to keep that job. But otherwise, Kevin Johnson's there, and then EJ Gaines has really primarily been the backup on the other side to Tre'Davious White. He's been playing the outside, and although he can play the slot, it's really been him. And what I've noticed is when they go with another slot guy, when Taron Johnson goes out, it's not really another corner. It's Saran Neal who comes in, who's a safety.
Big nickel.
That's right. Right? That's exactly right. And right. So they have a lot of mixing and matching and things that they can do with that with those guys.
I really forced big nickel. I was eager to say big
nickel. No, you had
that's
it.
That's good.
I really
you got it, though. You're right. Yeah. You're right.
You had it. In Jeopardy, you would have been in trouble because you have to wait until the entire question is asked, and then you would have had to say it.
What is big nickel?
I needed to beat Sal to big nickel. Right.
You got it.
You wanted to beat Sal to big nickel. This Kevin Johnson, he's the player, I think, if he's healthy. This is a guy with pedigree, but concussions, right?
He's had concussions and other injuries, I believe. Not just that, but he has had numerous injuries throughout his career. He's a former first round pick.
Right.
The guy is widely talented
and young.
Yeah, he is. And you know, right. So you know, Houston basically said, okay, well, we've done this. And, you know, the Houston Texans don't have a great secondary. And that was one of their spots, you know, evaluating them going into the draft that they had to really look at. But yet Kevin Johnson, they let go because they just didn't feel that he was going to be on the field and available enough. And here he is in Buffalo. And when he was signed, Sean McDermott said, we have a plan for him. We have a plan for EJ Gaines to get them into our training facility, to get them with our trainers, to keep them healthy and do those things. I had an extensive conversation today with EJ Gaines after practice about that, about staying healthy, treating your body right, and understanding what goes into it in the off season to do that. There's nothing you can do sometimes to prevent an injury on the football field. It just happens. You're hitting people, it's fast people, it's strong people, and they're hitting each other and banging heads and things like that. But there are things I think you can do in the off season as preventative measures to make sure you kind of last the marathon, so to speak, and make sure that you stay, you know, available as possible.
What are one or two of those things? Is this diet mostly or what?
Mostly, yeah. I think it's mostly diet. In fact, EJ talked about that, nutrition, eating right, putting the right things in your body, eating healthy, understanding, you know, working out and the soft tissue, the muscles and things
right.
like that.
Recovering from workout, yes. massages and that sort of stuff, like to just really take care of those muscles like that.
That's exactly right. And, you know, they're going to trust the training staff. They're going to trust this new facility they have, and everybody raves about it. It's amazing what they have. But you're right. I mean, I think nutrition is the first thing a lot of these guys bring up, Mike, which is it takes them a few years in the league, really, to kind of learn how to eat right, you know, in the offseason. And when, too, by the way, the other thing is the timing, because, you know, I think some guys, maybe they don't realize when they need to treat their body a certain way, when they need to give it downtime. Is it March? Is it April? Is it June? Is it July right before camp? When to ramp it back up? And, you know, as EJ said to me, you know, he's in his sixth year now, and he's kind of like just learning this stuff and how to really be preventative on that.
Is this the Bills thinking that they know this better than the league?
I don't know about that, Mike. I mean, there's a lot of sports science that's going on now, right? I think that if you employ good people with sports science, and the Bills have people in this regard, that, you know, you probably feel you can get an edge in some of those areas and some of the studies and some of the techniques. But I think it's really the facilities and the people. It's the people that are around, that are the communication, helping people, the facilities they have here, staying here year-round. A big reason they built this facility, which is, what, $18, $19 million that people talk about is, and they've made this known, they want players to stay here year-round if they can instead of going elsewhere. And if you're here year-round, then you're under the watchful eye of their trainers, and everybody's on the same page, so to speak. And I think that's a lot of it. You hear a lot of these guys going off to work out at a different facility, and maybe they're doing all the right things, but
yeah.
if it's not in conjunction with what, you know, your people are also doing, then you can kind of have a little bit of crosshairs there.
Okay, this is a couple of things. I probably should have put the question a little differently, that they think they know it better than other teams might or do, but okay, and maybe this is partly the Bills are disadvantaged as being in a market where maybe a higher percentage of their roster would go elsewhere in the offseason, and this is maybe also a little bit of control. We want to be in control of what you're doing to the fullest extent.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. You know, you pay these players millions and millions of dollars. They are a commodity. You want to keep them in pristine shape. You'd like to have them under control, to your eyes, your watch, as much as possible. That doesn't mean that you have to have people following them around all day, but you want to make sure that they have whatever they need, that they don't need to go anywhere else, and that you kind of know where they are and what they're doing. But yes, your first point is good. And if you follow Cole Beasley on Twitter, it's been interesting.
I was going to bring him up.
Yes, he talks about this a lot because he talks about how great that facility is, and then and he says it's the best in the league. And then Dallas fans say, how can you possibly say that? Look what you have in Dallas. Look at that stadium. Look at Jerry Jones' money. And Cole is quick to point out, look, it's great there, but you don't understand what goes into the facility we have here in Buffalo and how no one really has this, and we didn't even have these things in Dallas, to be honest with you.
Right. Yes, the fans would know better than the player how the facilities compare.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, the stadium is one thing. Like, I saw Beasley respond with one comeback was, yeah, it's designed to make them a ton of money. It's not any better for us than anywhere else. It's just, like, the amenities for fans that people can pay for is great for the franchise and great for the league, but as far as what players need or want, this is a cut above, and I took that to heart. Like, I don't know that I've spent much time at all thinking about what this new facility would offer the Bills and what it might afford them in the eyes of players.
Yeah, and today Kim Jones from NFL Network was there. I don't know if you guys saw, they did a couple of tweets from the Bills account on some stories, and we were all standing. What happens is we all stand in this area before we go out to the field for practice, before, you know, it is allowed for the media. And while we're standing there, we're right next to this training facility. It's actually a hallway that connects it to the field house. And the doors were open. They always are. And she said to me, she looked in and said, "This is amazing." And I said, "I know, right? I mean, that's why people keep talking about it." And even she basically said, yeah, like, she hasn't seen this very much in the league, if at all.
Is this McDermott's creation? Like, in terms of what it is, not how much it costs exactly, but what it is?
It's a good question. I don't know whose brainchild it was. I would think Sean McDermott had a lot to do with that. I'm sure Brandon Bean had some input, but, you know, knowing McDermott and how he feels about, you know, guys and training and their bodies and, you know, maintaining and things like that, I would think he had a lot of input. But he's also had the same training staff here since he was hired. This training staff, primarily, there's been some, I think, guys here or there that have come and gone. Primarily, it's the same training staff that really has lasted, even since Doug Marrone, I think, through these regimes. So I think he trusts them. He trusts the people that are in those positions to say, this is what we need, this is what we have, this is what we don't have, and this is what will make us better and more competitive going forward.
Well, hey, good for them. I mean, what Buffalo sports always needs to do is mine market inefficiencies, mine ways to level the playing field, because it's not going to be the free agent destination. So this could be, we'll have to see. It sounds good. This could be one way, and maybe an important way, where they can do that. Well, we will have to go to day three before talking about Dawson Knox
yes,
at any length.
Maybe tomorrow, so.
Maybe tomorrow.
I'll keep that in mind when I'm at practice tomorrow. I'll just watch him a little more specifically for you, Mike, and I'll be ready for you.
Thank you. All right.
All right, you're welcome.
See you, Sal.
That is Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline and his appearance here on WGR, sponsored by New York's only outlet, Liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
There is quite a bit of talk in sports today about U.S. 13, Thailand 0 yesterday. We were watching that in here and talking a little bit about that score as it was playing out. There was an event in this game today. We're watching France-Norway, worthy of mention. We'll do that. Danny Gare is coming up in about 15 minutes. He's going to play in our golf tournament. We'll talk about Game 7 tonight. And then 6 o'clock, Brian Koziol will make his U.S. Open predictions with us. We'll do our usual majors bet at that time. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. Thanks for being with us. This is WGR.
I've seen a lot of growth in him. Working out with him the first couple times, you know, just kind of seeing how he acted through the ball and things like that, and just to see how much he's changed and how focused he is right now. Not saying that he wasn't focused before, but I think he's really, like, stepped into his mindset, like, okay, I'm here to get better, and he's been doing a great job with that. He's been pushing me and Matt, and we've been pushing him and trying to get the best out of each other in meetings and whenever we ask questions in meeting rooms, and it's very competitive in those rooms, and that's how we want it.
All right, that's Josh Allen talking about Tyree Jackson. He said one thing that he probably had an instinct that, well, that might not have sounded right, and he went back and was like, I'm not saying he wasn't focused or whatever. Anyway, nice try, but it's all wrong. Here's what he should have said. Go find what Joe Flacco said in Denver about helping Drew Locke. I'm not here for that. I'm not here to be his mentor. And in the classic style of the NFL player, I am on this football team to help it win football games. That's really what I needed right there from Josh Allen. I love that. That would have been such a great move. Look, I'm not here to help him. I'm the quarterback of this team. I was brought here to be the – I'm not here to help the other guys.
After 1 year.
Yep.
That would have been
great. I got so many things to worry about. I'm trying to go out there and play good football. I'm trying to go out there and play the best football of my life. So as far as a time constraint and all that stuff, I'm not worried about developing guys or any of that. That is what it is. And like I said, I hope he does develop, but I don't look at that as my job. My job is to go win football games for this football team.
There it is. Thanks for telling me what sport it is twice. That's what Joe Flacco said. Great job. Joe just has – he's walking around with that.
Yep, just ready to go. You never know what's going to come up.
That's a search bar. It's not that hard.
I would have liked that from
Still
Alan.
Pretty quick.
Just, you know. Who? Yeah, what have you noticed in Tyree Jackson? Who is Tyree Jackson?
You mean the guy who's never going to get a chance to play? That guy?
What are you talking? What are you asking me? How do you ask me that? I mean, as far as time constraints go, I mean, I got a job to do here, man. All right, you get the point. All right, so we'll have Danny Gare coming up. What happened in this soccer game, I've mentioned it twice. France is winning 1-0. Norway comes in, and there's a cross across the penalty area. There's nobody there to take it. So a French defender, it's past the goalkeeper. The cross has been made, and the ball comes past the goalkeeper. A French defender is right there to just either – she tried to kick the ball over the end line for a corner to give the corner. She could have just taken the ball probably and then made a play with it because there's nobody on her.
Right.
Instead, she kicked it into the net.
Yeah, she tried to kick it out and kicked it right into the net.
She kicked it right into her own net. There was no pressure on her really and just blew it. And then she immediately grabs her head like it's – the angst of this moment, like, I can't believe I just did that.
Right. Yeah, there's own goals, and there's own goals when you're the country hosting the thing. Like, this game was sold out, and it's in France. I mean, she probably felt probably about as bad as you could feel.
And this was like, I mean, for an own goal, she could have, the only thing she could have done that she didn't do is kick a bicycle kick into her own net.
Right.
And then, like, this and was then just, she buried it.
And then run into the corner and slide on her knees and, like, do a dance around the flag. Like,
I was mistaken.
Right.
She buried it.
Yeah.
So France did get a penalty later after a review and scored and won 2-1, which I'll say I'm happy about.
They got her off the hook. Yeah, right.
That could have been bad.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, she really did bury that one in her own net, but her team won anyway. We'll talk to Danny Gare about tonight and other things, as we do with Danny. That'll be after sports. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. Stay tuned. This is WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.